Hello, welcome to the Friday, September 4th, 2015 edition of the Sand Center Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Recently, Tom got us started with a diary on scripting RTIR. We got a follow-up for this now from Xavier. Xavier presents another script for RTIR that does allow you to import our DShield data into RTIR. This is pretty handy if you're trying to look up an IP address. We do offer things like autonomous system number or abuse contacts and the like, so you can easily now reach that from RTIR. There are a number of other tools that use our data, so see if it's available and if you find it helpful. If you find any errors, let us know. We are still refining this feature, and I know there are a couple of issues we have sometimes with assigning autonomous system numbers correctly, but if you find any problems, please let us know. And several browser makers announced that they will no longer support the RC4 encryption algorithm as of the beginning of the next year. First one where you should expect to see this is Firefox with version 44, which is scheduled to be released at the end of January 2016. And in February, Chrome and Internet Explorer, as well as Microsoft's Edge browser, will follow. Now, this could cause some issues with old web servers, in particular web servers that you typically find in embedded devices. Some of them may not be able to do anything better than SSL version 3 with RC4, which at today's standard is no longer acceptable, and that's why browsers are removing RC4 as an encryption algorithm. But you may run into issues, so take a look. Also, if you run a website, you hopefully do run SSL Labs, the test from Qualys regularly, in order to make sure that your SSL configuration is still adequate and you won't run into any issues as browsers no longer support these older ciphers. For mainstream servers like Apache, Nginx, IIS, and such, that shouldn't really be a problem as long as they're using standard SSL libraries. Where I really see problems is essentially embedded devices that run ancient SSL libraries and then don't support anything beyond SSL version 3. But in these cases, you may already have problems obtaining valid certificates for these servers, because in my experience, they typically also don't support SSL private keys beyond 1024 bits, or they still only support MD5 signatures for the SSL certificates, which is usually a no-no for any legitimate certificate authority these days. And well, embedded devices and the Internet of Things, of course, is one of my favorite topics. So Rapid7 came up with a report on vulnerabilities in baby monitors. They looked at a number of different baby monitors. Now, the reason they picked baby monitors is, well, first of all, they're a little bit low-hanging fruits in the sense that they have web interfaces that tend to be fairly minimalistic, and of course, with that, also get some neat vulnerabilities. But they're also used usually in very private environments. It's not like a security camera that you set up outside your house. Baby monitors are usually inside your house watching your kids. Also, them being sort of sold somewhat as secure devices, as Rapid7 points out, should put them to a higher standard. Well, no surprise that they found the usual set of device vulnerabilities. From bad cloud-based websites that are being used to review the footage and don't authenticate users correctly, to backdoor credentials that were built in and could not be changed. So pretty much your standard set of web application vulnerabilities. Now, some of them I would be probably less concerned about, like where you can flash the firmware with physical access to the device, but quite a number of the vulnerabilities were remotely exploitable. Even sadder in some ways is that many of these companies do not have an orderly vulnerability disclosure process. So there is really nobody to send details about the vulnerability to. The one company they sort of pointed out as being somewhat different was Philips. Philips, of course, being a larger consumer electronics company, somewhat more established, I guess, already thought about some of these issues, at least from a disclosure point of view. And Checkpoint has an interesting write-up about yet another piece of Android crypto ransomware. Just like prior versions, it will encrypt your phone and then asking for a ransom. Couple neat little twists here. First of all, from a technical point of view, this particular malware does use XMPP, essentially Jabber, to communicate with the command and control server. That tends to blend a little bit better into your standard network traffic. And then the warning screen that will tell you that your phone just got encrypted claims that the NSA did do that for you and that you're actually now paying off the NSA. I doubt that the NSA has budget problems to the point where they would have to rely on crypto ransomware for financing. I think that's really just sort of an interesting twist and probably just to make a little bit fun of an already bad situation. Well, that's it for today. So thanks again for listening. We have a long weekend here in the US. Monday is a holiday. So the next podcast will be on Tuesday, maybe Wednesday. Depends on how my travel plans work out over this long weekend. Thanks also to ThreatStop again for sponsoring this podcast. Talk to you again on Tuesday or Wednesday. Bye.